Welcome back to Third Act Saviors, a podcast where we watch a bad movie and fix it by changing only the third act. I'm Michael Fromm.
I'm Daniel Kinnaman.
And I'm Jacob Kuykendall.
Boy, do we have a local treasure for you.
Oh, yeah. Today's film was requested by a very special listener, Maria. And Maria, you picked a real banger for us.
Yeah, it slaps.
Yeah.
Maria's the most special requester. Somebody we don't personally know, as far as we know.
That's right.
I think this is our third request. First time not from someone I live with or that is blood relatives of Jacob.
That's right. That we know of.
Maria describes this movie as a wild, beige, rich boat person romp. And all of that is accurate.
It's very accurate.
100%.
This is the classic 1994, I believe, film, Double Jeopardy, starring Tommy Lee Jones, Ashley Judd, and I was very shocked to see Bruce Greenwood.
Oh, yeah. I think, 1999.
1999, sorry, way later.
The peak of human civilization.
The end of history.
I remember the trailers for this film, and I remember my dad saying something along the lines of, like, I don't think that's how Double Jeopardy works.
I mean, yeah, we do have a lawyer.
We may get into some of the legal questions here in this movie.
Does Double Jeopardy also cover you shoving a Geo Metro off a ferry?
there's a lot of vehicular, maybe manslaughter that occurs in a couple of sequences here.
Probably.
Also, just stealing an officer's gun, probably a crime.
What about hitting a phone booth while someone is talking on the phone?
This does feel like the most 1999 ass movie that there could possibly be.
This is a paint-by-numbers thriller movie. It's like, people like thrillers. I don't know. We got a boob. We got a stabbing murder. And some intrigue.
In some ways, it's also the most lazy one, though.
Yeah, and also it was definitely like, let's keep it PG-13, though. Not too much violence or boobs. Let's make sure that this is appropriate for the family. We want this to run on TNT later.
Which is funny. It is rated R, but I totally agree with you. Yeah,
whoa.
I had to look that up because I was like, huh? What? Yeah, somehow.
Does Tommy Lee Jones just say fuck three times or something?
There's a boob. There's boobs.
There's boobs?
Where were everyone those boobs? Leave the room.
There's boobs in this movie.
All right. Jacob, you're going to run this one down for us, and we'll interrupt you as much as we possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we open on, it's the Pacific Northwest. Not only the Pacific Northwest, it is Whidbey Island, a place I don't know, 45 minutes from where we're all sort of generally living, although we don't all live in exactly the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're introduced to some characters whose last names I won't remember.
Parsons.
It kind of comes up later.
Nick and Libby Parsons. I remember that.
There is Libby Parsons, played by Ashley Judd, our hero. She's there with her son, who's sort of a question mark young, maybe 8-ish.
I watched it with Katrina last night, and she was furious about the age of this child.
Oh, really?
How old is
because
this child?
At some point, someone in the prison is like, it's his 8th birthday. And
we
were like,
yeah,
he's not already 8 years old.
Yeah, so he was like 2 at the party scene.
He's like 2 at the beginning of this movie, and he's like 9 at the end.
Yeah.
Played by an actor who is, I don't know, 12?
Yeah.
That kid at the beginning, I think was like 5. And he's
guys,
like
that kid at the beginning was me. That was my existence. A little bowl-cutted blonde kid that everyone was like, what a special boy. That was me.
We still say you're a special boy. You just have a different haircut
That's
now.
That's right. Gotta get the bowl back out.
Yeah, we could get that salad bowl out.
Yeah, now we need a salad bowl. We gotta upgrade.
It starts with a very strange conversation where Libby tells her son, I hope you never grow up and you never meet a beautiful woman and leave me.
Who will go boating with me? I love boats, especially that one right there.
Yeah, we love our beautiful boaters.
Also, her son is like, well, you can go boating with dad. She's like, yuck.
Yeah.
Which doesn't pay off at all. She immediately goes boating with him and it's like, oh, let's have a good time. So they're hanging out at the beach, but they have to go to a party hosted by Libby's husband, Nick, who loves art. He loves wine.
He is an art psycho.
He's an art psycho.
Yeah.
Also,
clearly very rich.
He's played by Bruce Greenwood, who I only know really as like elderly, but not old, like father figure to some rough and tumble, you know, starship captains who aren't ready for the role yet, right? Because that's what he's been for the past 15 years of movies. So seeing him as like a young dude really freaked my bean. Like I blew my mind stack. I didn't get it.
Maria points out that every person at this party is dressed in taupe, and she is correct. But it's like
absolutely accurate.
They are in an environment that only existed in the 90s. They are dressed in a way that you could only pull off in the 90s. Like it's a 90s ass 90s party with rich people looking at 90s ass art, doing 90s ass things and acting 90s ass ways. If anyone pulled this shit today, they'd be publicly flogged.
Also, just a local flavor question. I've never been to like a rich person's house in Island County.
Oh, you have to go, Mike.
Which is where this takes place. Is there a fucking, do they have indoor pools like that? Because this feels like this area, the Pacific Northwest, for those who don't know, is not really pool country, is what I would describe. The only people who have pools are those who live in apartment complexes, and they're only open for 2 months out of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
My parents are looking to move out of their house, and they're like, hey, check out this place. It's on Whidbey Island, and it's got an indoor pool.
Well, they should
watch
grab
your mom closely.
Don't let them get on a boat, Daniel.
Yeah. Oh, no.
For a lot of reasons. Yeah. I looked up this movie, at least a lot of these parts were actually filmed in Whidbey Island. So that is an actual place in Whidbey Island with a pool.
Oh, we got to find it on Airbnb and stay there.
We got to look for it. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the world. And I could tell that they filmed it in the Pacific Northwest somewhere. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been surprised if you told me Vancouver. But
oh, I have a Pacific Northwest location thing, but I got to save it till after the movie. Remind me to talk about Pacific Northwest. So he's throwing a party. We begin probably the first time of 100 times in this movie where even though this is a thriller, the movie, like the writers are clearly not all that interested in like details. So Nick's just like kind of a rich guy who does something. He's throwing a party to, I believe, announce the opening of a new private school.
It's like a fundraiser, right?
Yeah, it's like a PTA fundraiser, but like a very rich PTA fundraiser.
Libby's talking to her friend,
Angie.
Is that her friend? Really, who is Angie? She's just like hanging out.
She's the headmistress of the new school that's opening.
She's not the headmistress. She's a really popular teacher. That redhead that we meet twice is the headmistress.
Oh, the tomato farmer.
Because it's real awkward because he's like, this is a great school. I'm glad we're raising money. But let's give a round of applause for the fucking sexy as hell headmistress of our school.
I wrote down ravishing and adorable headmistress.
I mean, that was the exact quote.
We also meet the worst lawyer who's ever been born. Bobby Long, who looks like he looks like a sack of potatoes. I know that, Daniel, you have a note here about the child being called a sack of potatoes.
Oh yeah,
but this guy looks like a potato.
He does look like a potato. Did anyone get called a sack of potatoes by their mom? I feel like that is also a 90s thing.
yeah absolutely.
Look, the problem with the world today is that you can't call children sacks of potatoes while you heft them around.
You can't. You're always getting canceled for that.
Yeah, I got
Daniel.
Yeah. Sorry,
it's PC culture.
I'll get back on Twitter someday.
Just about Bobby Long, real quick. He does look like he could have been in Bilbo Baggins's kitchen breaking dishes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we get it. Yeah. Nick is saying, oh, look at this hot headmistress. We're raising money for an important cause, this private school. Then after the we cut to sort of after the party, and he tells Libby, close your eyes. I got you a cool present. And then she opens her eyes and there is a sailboat. Oh, well, now they get to go sailing together.
And this is a weird moment because it's like Angie comes up and he's like, should we tell her? And then he's like, what? Yeah. I don't know. Should we? And I thought for sure this was going to be the beginning of like them like pushing her off the cliff or something.
Yeah.
Because I thought for sure this were there was going to be a lot more like transparent domestic violence that occurred in this movie just based on the plot. And there's basically no sign at all that any crime is going to happen. Like, I mean, they just live a nice life.
He interrupts, like, at the party, Nick interrupts a couple talking about art to correct them and humiliate them.
That's his,
I think it's a Picasso from his blue period.
Wrong.
It's a Kandinsky.
Oh, God.
Well, he only knows one thing about art, which is a particular type of art. One artist.
This movie loves Kandinsky. And don't we all?
I also think this is funny that he surprises her with a sailboat because it makes that previous scene where her son asks her about going sailing really confusing to be like, oh, they didn't have a boat?
Yeah. Maybe Nick spilled the beans to Maddie. There you go. That's my headcanon. My double Jeopardy headcanon.
So they hop on the boat. For a romantic, I guess, day, dump the kid off with
Angie.
Dump the kid off with Angie. Off they go. They're talking about how much they're having a great time. They make a kind of a pretty lame snack plate that's mostly apples.
Yeah.
And a little bit of cheese. There's some nice late 90s softcore sex scene.
Yeah, hell
between
yeah.
The two of them. Also,
where the boobs are? Where were the boobs?
You missed the boobs?
I missed the boobs.
Yeah, there's. They start off with Ashley Judd facing away, and I was like, okay, it's going to be one of these. They're just going to see a nude back. And then a side boob developed into full boob. I now am realizing I'm describing this too much and it's creepy.
Daniel's Mr. Skin corner.
Yeah, that's right. According to Mr. Skin, it's got 3 stars. And frankly, I disagree. 2.5.
Libby wakes up later in the night covered in blood.
Okay. Side note, can you just like hop downstairs in a boat that is like in the open ocean and do some effing? Without like scanning the horizon, at least
I think
feel
so.
Like you could.
I think so.
You could get away with it.
Really?
How do pirates do it? Come on.
I don't have a sailboat. I know a person who does, and I feel like he and his partner just travel the world in a weird way. And in my mind, people who own these boats just bone on the open ocean all the time.
You don't need, like. I thought you had to drop anchor.
That's a euphemism,
yeah,
right?
You had to drop anchor to drop anchor.
I mean, I suppose you would drift if you didn't.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right into an oil barge.
Maybe they did drop anchor. You know, they weren't floating around too much.
But it looked pretty deep. I don't know. She's like...
You sailors out there, sailors of the world, write in to, thirdxsaviors@gmail.com?
That's right.
And let us know that if you wanted to like take a nap or go to Pound
Town.
No,
come on. Nap's
if
different.
You, take a nap. That's, yeah, come on.
If you want to go to Pound Town, do you have to drop anchor first?
Too.
Or would you worry about drifting so far off course? I mean, it's open ocean. What are you going to run into?
If you're a listener who doesn't know the answer, but you have a sailboat, have sex with the anchor and have sex without the anchor and let us know the differences.
Yeah.
You need a control group.
But before you do that, go buy a composition notebook and take very detailed notes because we don't want bad science happening here.
No. And then send those to us. Libby wakes up covered in blood. Kind of surprised she didn't wake up as, I don't know, blood was getting splashed on her. There's blood all over her and the robe she's in and the bed, and a trail of blood leads through the boat.
Right up on top of that brie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right onto the snack plate.
On and around the cheese plate.
And like, the blood on the brie really, like, affects her. She's kind of just like, huh. And then it cuts to the brie, and she goes,
That was $18.
She goes up onto the deck of the ship where there's more blood and a bloody knife, which she, of course, picks up and starts looking at.
Oh, when you see a knife, you gotta grab it.
She's calling for Nick, but he's not nowhere to be found. And then the Coast Guard suddenly appears and tells her, I don't know, we're going to arrest you. And she's like, I don't know where my husband is.
Yeah. When the Coast Guard pulls up, they yell at her and she's all in shock and stuff. And she goes, I don't know who my husband is. Which is a weird
Where my husband is.
I thought it was who. Okay.
Now we enter my favorite part of the movie, the excellent legal battle.
Oh, boy. Hey, Jacob, as a lawyer, you like help the cops arrest your clients, right?
Oh, definitely. Also, I don't know if it's the very next scene, but I love that we cut to Libby in a jail cell, and her lawyer just comes up to the door of the jail cell and is like, judge denied bail. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
Doesn't she have to be present for that to occur?
Yeah, I would say traditionally they're involved in that process.
So I got the impression from the first sequence is that the sheriff was so nice and friends with her that he called the lawyer to be there when he arrested her, is what I got from that. Was like, hey, I got to go arrest her.
Oh, yeah, we do have that scene.
But yeah. I'm not gonna do it. You know, she's a white lady. Let's be nice to her.
Yeah, she gets the rich person special.
Let's make sure her lawyer is present. And that's why he's like, I'm here as a friend. Is what the lawyer says at the beginning. And I winked to Daniel and Jacob as
I saw.
You did. You have to yell wink.
Wink. Yeah.
The cops show up at a beach where she's hanging out with Maddie, her little sack of potatoes. And
Daniel, you're gonna get us canceled.
Sorry. Look, I'm gonna say it. I've made the decision.
We don't condone that on this podcast.
You sack of russets.
Well, she's hanging out with her sack of potatoes, and the cops roll up and send the lawyer out to chat with her. The cop whips out the handcuffs to be like, sorry, I gotta take you in. She's like, not in front of my child. And I guess they're like, yeah, okay, sure, that makes sense. Which is how the rich people do get treated. If she had a net worth of under like $200,000, they'd just send the attack helicopter.
Yeah, and
that's right.
A troop of hounds.
Yeah.
Pack. It's probably a pack of hounds.
C-130 circling the beach.
That part at least felt like, okay, yeah, that sounds about right. This is totally unrelated, but I have an anecdote from back when in my private practice days when I worked for another attorney, where he called me one day and was like, hey, I have a client who's a landlord and he's like renting his basement out and it's going to be condemned as a slum. So can you go out there and meet the cops there to just keep an eye on things so they don't arrest him? And it was very much like this experience right here. It was very bad, but cool.
Nice.
And as an attorney, it was cool. Not cool for the guy or definitely not cool for the tenant who should not have been living there.
Oh, yeah. Did the landlord get arrested?
No, although they probably would have arrested him if I hadn't been there. And I didn't know anything as an attorney. I was just a baby lawyer. So I was just there being like, But because there was a lawyer there, they're like, oh, I will let you know.
They get the handcuffs out and you're like, bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
Hit him with the spray bottle. Shake the can of dry beads out.
It kind of does work that way. Yeah, he comes to the jail cell to tell Libby, like, sorry, I goofed. No bail. I guess you're a flight risk. He doesn't say that, but in real life, that would be the issue. Then we have a scene where he's basically telling her, like, well, you know, he did have a gigantic life insurance policy out on your husband, so that gives you a pretty big motive for murdering him. So did you do it? Which I think raises a lot of questions about motive and at the very least, what they assume she did. I guess stabbed him to death, threw him over the side of the boat and called the Coast Guard.
Well, he called the Coast Guard.
Yeah, I was surprised in his...
How did he get off the boat?
I assume Angie picked him up.
Where'd the blood come from?
Hey, I assume Angie picked him up in another boat.
In a boat? He bought two boats? Hey, spoiler alert, everyone. He was not murdered. It was all murdered.
Here's what I assume, and this is the thing, is there's lots of little plots in this, but none of them matter, and they would have been much better, like, you know, when magic tricks happen, tell me how he did it, but they don't. But I assume he drugged her, and she fell asleep, like, he drugged her wine, and she fell asleep, and then he just stabbed himself in the arm, dribbled his blood everywhere, called in a hey, I've been stabbed, help me out, Coast Guard. Cut the thing, and then got in a boat with Angie and sailed away.
Like, oh, so Angie's out there in like a freaking rowboat. I guess if Ashley Judd is drugged, then sure, but yeah.
The part that I found really strange is my guess throughout this movie was, oh, he wanted to elope with Angie, so, and with money, with, I don't know, money. Actually, that doesn't make any sense. But he wants to get out of this marriage, so he's faking his death. Except he never blames Libby. In fact, even in the Coast Guard call, he just says, I've been stabbed, but he does not blame her for it, which makes the fact that the Coast Guard immediately assumes she did it really strange, because there's basically no evidence of anything having occurred aside from blood everywhere. Seems really sketchy top to bottom.
Yeah.
Also, she probably doesn't get a life insurance policy if she murders her husband.
No, but apparently it's set up. So this is what I think his plan is that he's going under, right? He's bankrupt. He's embezzled so much money.
Yeah, we find that out later.
He's embezzled so much money that the Seattle thing is not a big deal, we hear about earlier in the movie. He's embezzled so much money that he's going under, so he decides to frame his wife for murder and commit insurance fraud simultaneously, so that the insurance money goes straight to his kid, and that he can just then sneak back into his kid's life because he's fucking Angie, and just take that $2 million trust fund as his own.
The sketchy part is, I think they clarify, as it would be in real life, that the trust fund becomes available when he's 18, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know how that... I mean, you're the lawyer, Jacob.
none of the details here would work even a little bit, and they don't even try to justify it. But she's... Now we get to see Libby in court, where it's like, well, Libby... didn't you kill your husband for all that money you can't actually access or have in any way? And she's like, no. I'm like, guilty.
This prosecutor fucking owns, by the way. she's like, what was it? But she's like,
did aliens murder your
that's
husband?
Right. No, if you didn't kill your husband, then who did? Pirates or aliens? Objection. Overruled. I love this argument.
This rocks. Tell me more.
Oh, that's right. Aliens couldn't have inherited $2 million.
Because they don't use human currency or even know of the concept of money.
Then we cut to the jurors all being like, she's guilty. She did it. That's it. She did it. There it is. Slam cut to Libby's now in jail. She's in prison.
Playing a harmonica. Not really.
She makes her two friends that are both in prison with her being like, this prison sucks and you're not going to make it and nobody likes you.
Yeah, they go from like, ooh, fresh fish to like best friends in the span of like 20 seconds.
Yeah, they are busting her balls and then she's like, get away from me. And they say, no, that's it. Best friends. You made them. Also, these women have names. One of them is Evelyn. And the other one I don't remember, but Katrina was like, I recognize that woman. And it took me about an hour and a half on the Double Jeopardy IMDb page to figure out who the hell this character is and who the actress is that played them.
They are recognizable character actresses, I think.
For sure, for sure. They definitely are. It was mostly just that these characters are so shot in such a, like... chopped up way that like you never get to know either of them, and they're really just there for sound bites over and over and over again.
But
yeah, there's
Margaret and Evelyn.
Evelyn and Margaret, thank you. Yes.
The one who gives her legal advice, that's a hilarious little scene.
It's
but
so
I forgot
good.
To mention that we do see Libby tells Angie hey, I'm going to jail, so you should adopt my son.
Yeah.
Which is key to everything that happens.
Because her parents were bad, mm-hmm. and she doesn't want to leave her son there. But yeah. it gets confusing later. But not, I don't know. There's Hello? A lot of things that they want you to just kind of understand the universe without telling you about the universe.
Hello, Continue husband's coworker. Could you adopt my child, please?
He really likes you, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been an easier explanation to just be like, my parents have passed away. I don't have parents, as opposed to being like, that's how it works.
The problem is they wrote it in so that she has to go to her mother later in the movie.
Right.
Oh.
For the tomato money.
Oh, that's the tomato lady. Money. I was like, who the fuck is
That's her mother at the very beginning of that, because she says in this sequence with Angie, I wouldn't put my son in that situation. So we're like, traumatic abusive household, but I'm also going to get a bunch of money from them. So it was dad who's getting drunk at the VFW during the tomato money sequence.
It's so strange. Angie comes and brings the little boy, whose name I've already forgotten again. I'm sorry. I'm
Maddie.
Doing bad with the
Maddie.
Name.
Maddie.
Maddie and Angie come and visit Libby at the jail. Hey, that's great. Then it's like, it's a week later, and Angie isn't picking up the phone. She hasn't come to visit. Libby starts being like, wow, what's going on? Talks to her friend, the jailhouse friend, one of her two jailhouse pals, who's like, well, there must be some way to solve this conundrum. And thus begins the first of the wild mystery, the investigative genius that is Libby, where she just calls the school pretending to be Angie and is like, hey, can you give me my address and phone number?
That is her only move in this, like walking into a place and being like, I'm a fake identity. What's my address? And they're like, oh, yeah, your address is blank, 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 right?
Tap, tap.
Absolutely. Goodbye.
To be fair,
four times.
To be fair, we're making these jokes now, but there is an entire industry of phishing scams that rely exactly on this, and they succeed.
Which, you know, unfortunately, she does get Angie on the phone, who's like, sorry, I moved to San Francisco. Sure, you can have Maddie on the phone. Just as her husband walks into the door and Maddie goes, Daddy! So their plan kind of goes down the tubes. Mm-hmm. Their secret fake a death plan goes down the tubes because she's able to instantly find the phone number and they blow it instantly. But unfortunately, she goes and talks to her jailhouse pal who's like, I used to be a lawyer. There's no don't even bother trying to tell anyone. No one's going to believe you. Don't even if he's alive, who cares? And it would be actually much easier for you to just try and murder him because that's not a crime.
Why didn't she call Robbie Long or like the sheriff who was her like friend back in town?
Yeah,
she's got a new lawyer, her cellmate.
She doesn't need to.
It's just that the only course of action we see is that she calls the insurance company to try to say he's alive. Don't you want to get your money back and prosecute him for fraud? When, like, I don't know. Like I thought maybe Bobby Long was in on it and like that whole plotline got cut or something.
That felt more like it because he does a bad job and he's clearly their friends.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It's kind of, it's really weird because there's this plan by Nick involves a lot of people doing to support, and the movie goes out of its way to make it clear that none of them are complicit in this. Not even Angie is complicit in this, even though she's there for every step of this plot.
Yeah, wait, then who was driving the boat?
Oh no! I think Angie's complicit in it. I think she just was dumb, not dumb. She just was bamboozled.
She let her guard down and got blown up.
yeah,
that's right.
She's just the second victim of this guy, but helped him perpetrate the first crime. Well,
yeah, she
the first
has
known
to.
Crime.
Yeah,
it has to be the only way.
If Ashley Judd can crack the case wide open by making two phone calls from prison, I feel like she could maybe loop someone else in on this master criminal.
Yeah.
This is the part of the movie where we get our explanation of what Double Jeopardy is.
Yeah, would you like to explain that, Daniel?
Yeah, okay, so if you commit a crime and get punished for it, you cannot go to prison for committing the same crime. I guess specifically the same crime. So if, like, I were to, I were to murder someone. Wait, if I were to, I didn't murder someone, but everyone thinks I did.
And you were convicted of murdering someone.
Yes, and I serve my time in prison and I pay my debts. Once I'm out, I am free to go actually murder them because I've already paid my debt to society. I've paid it in advance.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny. The movie uses this with murder, but as we all know, if I were to beat Daniel up and get it charged with assault, then it's free. It's free reign after that point.
In this scenario, I did the Fight Club self beat up in Jacob's office. Jacob didn't actually beat me up. And also, I want to point out, no Double Jeopardy happens in this movie.
not at all.
The title of this movie and this scene could be completely excised. Wouldn't matter.
But that's not how Double Jeopardy works or what it is or how the law works. But in the purposes of this movie, that is what they say it does, even though it never comes up and is never tested. It'd be really funny if at the end of the movie, they're like, that doesn't work that way. Oh, my God.
Who told you that?
Who told you this?
A question, Jacob.
Yeah.
Does Triple Jeopardy exist?
Whoa.
I guess so. That would mean you'd have to have been, you commit a crime, commit a crime, the same crime again.
Yeah.
And then you can't be convicted the third time.
Yeah. Is it like multiplying negative numbers together? Like the third time you go to jail
again? It's a positive. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fourth time you don't.
I always picture crime as like chicken pox. You know, I get busted for weed when I'm 6 years old so that I can just smoke and smoke and smoke and smoke in my adulthood. And it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And all the neighborhood parents organize a weed selling party.
Yes. Let's just get it over with now.
Get them all in jail.
Because it's way more dangerous if they get caught smoking weed as adults.
Yeah, I think that is how it works.
What about so this? Hold on.
Does that kind of legal
important
advice, Jacob?
Sorry. I should answer all the law questions here.
Another law question. Can you tell me about daily Double Jeopardy?
Well, the punishment is twice as bad.
Oh, that's right.
The reward.
If you're found innocent, you also get to be innocent of whatever the next crime you commit.
And also, a lot of people think it's wise to, like, bet a small amount, but you really should be more aggressive because the daily Double Jeopardies are really what sets you above in terms of the win. Getting those daily Double Jeopardies. Find those fast and early.
You want a Class A felony.
Yeah.
All right, that's all my Jeopardy jokes.
Libby, now having been explained that there's no point to even try to tell anyone that she's innocent of the crime she's been convicted of, takes the advice that she should go the opposite way, admit that she did the crime, and just prepare to murder her husband as soon as she gets out of jail. So we see her doing crunches in the yard. Then she goes to her parole and is like, yeah, I did the crime. I'm really sorry, but I'm just ready to straighten out my life. And they're like, okay, good enough. Sounds great. You're free. She goes to live in a halfway house where her parole officer is also her landlord. We were introduced to Tommy Lee Jones, the other main character in this movie, like 45 minutes in.
First build, too.
I'm sorry. There's I'm looking at Daniel's notes. She also goes to the library where some pervazoid shows her how to look up where Angie's moved.
Oh, that's after Tommy Lee Jones, though.
Oh, you're right. Yes. Sorry. She meets Tommy Lee Jones, who's like, I give nobody second chances. I'm a real tough, hard ass. You have to keep your nose straight, Missy, if you want to live here and get a job.
It's basically every character he played in the 90s.
But with sideburns.
But with sideburns. And less authority, but also kind of more authority.
Yeah. He's a legal expert slash judo master, as we see in the...
Yeah, he's like a former law professor turned parole officer who also is the administrator of the halfway house, which yeah. I don't know a lot about this section of the world, but I doubt that happens very frequently.
Yeah, that seems like you're stacking a lot of work on this one guy. I guess very efficient for movie purposes to just be
for
like,
sure.
Yeah, just kind of generally. He also, as the parole officer, chases her down personally, I guess just yeah. leaving the halfway house to run itself for, I don't know, 6 months to a year. The timeline of this movie gets really complicated. Because I think we find out that Ashley Judd is convicted, sent to prison for 6 years and gets out in 3, I want to say.
I thought she was gone for 6 years.
I thought she was convicted for like a 15 to 20 and gets out in 6.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's it. She doesn't age even one day. They don't even try.
Bruce Greenwood gets a little gray.
It's very hard to tell how much time passes in this movie after she leaves the prison, too.
Especially since they hired like a 6-year-old actor to play a 2-year-old. And then at some point yes. in the prison, Evelyn comes in saying, he turned 8. And I'm like, he wasn't already 8 years old?
Oh, also, in that scene you're talking about, Michael,
yeah.
Ashley Judd asks Evelyn, they say that even a baby that is separated from its mother on the day of its birth remember her voice. Do you think that's true? And Evelyn is, of course, like, I absolutely think that's true. I think it would have been way cooler if she's like, that sounds like complete bullshit. Wrong.
Malarkey.
That's baloney. Ashley Judd goes, Libby goes to the library and gets a creepy perv to help her surf the web.
Yeah, Pervazoid. Love that guy.
They're surfing the classic 90s internet, basically the Space Jam website.
Yeah, they have one. This is before tabs, so they have one window of hamster dance, the other window.
She wants to know where Angie's gone and taken her son as well as her husband so she can go on a revenge spree. And the guy's like, yeah, let me type in the numbers. Yep, this is where they live. Got it. No problem.
No, we cannot skip over this sequence because this is the most bonkers internet I have seen in a very long time. And it's very good because he's like, do you know her address? Zip code? No. Do you know her social security number?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Well, if you did, we could just go to the Social Security search bar and find her. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, man?
The government's like we got to put this on the internet. We got to get this out there.
Everyone's Social Security numbers. And then he's like, she says, she's a school teacher. And he says, well, let's just go to schoolteacher.com and search for Angela Green. And it comes up with 2,000 people, 2,000 teachers named Angela Green. And she decides that with all of their like addresses and phone numbers, and she's like, that's too much. I can't do it.
Internet.
It would take how many, like 4 days, working like 4 hours a day to call each of these 2,000 women? And I'm like, I don't know. I was dumbfounded by this whole thing. And the first thing some college kid in a library is going to ask is like, do you know her social security number?
Yeah.
Like, is everyone in the 1990s a hacker?
I mean, that reminds me, I should tell you guys my social security number, just in case. Just in case it ever comes up and you disappear. Need it.
I don't know.
If I, like, lock myself out of my apartment or something, it's good that you have that.
Well, I'll need it.
Well, you should do it on the podcast so listeners can help.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 615-867-5309.
I was going to make that joke for you if you didn't.
Good, we
beautiful.
Got there.
Beautiful.
Coming in at number 3 in the list of funny numbers. The Tommy Two Tones song.
Number 1.
Yeah, number 1. 69, we know. The great
number 2,
shall never be dethroned.
420.
Yep. Also nice.
Number 4, 800-87355.
Turn that one upside down.
Yeah, for our younger listeners, get a calculator from your parents. So this movie has this thing where I'm not sure what the people making it actually were interested in, because usually when you're doing a thriller, part of the fun is like seeing how they crack the case, even though they're under the gun, people are hunting them. See also, I don't know, The Fugitive with Tommy Lee Jones, any other movie.
Oh, The Fugitive is very good.
Yeah. In this, every time Ashley Judd doesn't know where someone is, she just goes like, is this where they are? Oh, yeah. Okay. I got him. No problem.
Dope.
The creepo wants to go on a date with her, but she's like, I just got out of prison for murdering my husband. And he's like, ooh, never mind then.
He is like that.
So then she has to go next step. She's going to break into the school, go into the administrator's office, and I guess find her forwarding address. It's really unclear what the paperwork she needs to find in here does.
She does find that. She finds the social security number.
Yeah, which pays off. But the cops roll in for, I don't know, what, somebody called them to this school?
Or they had a silent alarm?
I mean, she just punches through a window and then unlocks the door, so she's not even trying to really be sneaky about it. Then she runs away. Her police friend from earlier chases her in a Jeep. She runs along through the forest. She runs along the beach. They're chasing her, trying to run her down with the Jeep. She dives under a sand dune, and instead of a train, it's a Jeep this time, doing a flip over her.
Mm-hmm.
But then they just catch her.
The cops are fine.
The crash Jeep.
It's like when you crash a warthog in Halo, you just get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you press the flip button.
Yeah.
And then, then they bust her. She's now in a prison cell, and Tommy Lee Jones shows up, and he's like, I'm taking you back to jail. You blew it. You didn't get a job. You continued your crime spree. All you had to do was wait 3 years, and then you could have gotten your kid back, which seems really weird, because, like, from where? How would she get her kid back? I thought her friend adopted her child while she was in prison.
Yeah.
See how that's supposed to work?
Yeah. I guess, like, I don't know how it works. Maybe she was just a guardian, didn't have full custody, because the dad isn't the dad. He's just, like, I guess, fake new boyfriend.
Yeah.
The whole...
Although not.
The whole procedure of who has... and this is the thing that happens throughout, is we're going to go down a trail now in which Nick Parsons, played by Bruce Greenwood, has at least three different identities over the course of 6 years. And continues to take his son along with him without changing the son's name, at least not his first name. And every police officer we meet along the way seems to think that this makes it foolproof for them to ever identify that he was the person he was 6 years ago. And I'm like, the trail cannot possibly... He has a child that is being enrolled in schools.
Yeah.
Like,
all you have to do
follow
is hold
that
up a photo.
Trail. Yeah, follow that trail. Like, it's... I don't know. The whole thing is...
Yeah, they don't even try to explain it. Because... also, if Angie adopted her son, we find out Angie's dead. That child has no legal parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my thing, is once she finds out that Angie was blown up in a fire and that, I guess, Angie's husband at the time, Simon, which we don't know officially, is Nick, like, wouldn't you just say, oh, hey, I have no fucking clue who's, like, isn't there some legal recourse? It's like, I don't know who it is that has access to my child.
Yeah, I would like to get some follow-up on the death of this person named Angie, whose house exploded.
Yeah, the whole thing is just fucking bonkers. Sorry, we're going way off track. Jacob, where were we?
Yeah, so Tommy Lee Jones takes her on a ferry, which was very Pacific Northwest-y. They park. Libby and Tommy Lee Jones's character, whose character name I also don't remember, they have a little conversation. Because she's like, I just want to get my kid back, and don't you understand? And Tommy Lee Jones is like, yeah, the right way to do that would be just live in my halfway house for the next 3 years. She notices that he has a photo of a young woman on his dashboard, and she's like, "What about your daughter? Don't you care?" And he's like, "Shut up. I'm getting out of here. You did this wrong."
And neither does the movie, because that never comes up.
He handcuffs her to the outside of her car door with the window rolled down. And then he goes to go get a cup of coffee in the cafe on the ferry, which also to me strikes as like uniquely Pacific Northwest. The one like accurate part of this is where he gets out of his car to go get a cup of coffee on the ferry.
Hey, remember when the three of us drove to Jacob's bachelor party on the ferry and went and got beers?
Yeah, I remember that.
That was fun. There's a photo of that somewhere.
Yeah, you can get drunk on the ferry.
Yeah, the Friday ferry, Friday afternoon ferry from Seattle to Bainbridge Island is just a bunch of like 40 to 60 year olds who make a lot of fucking money getting wine drunk on the ferry.
Also, ferry ride really not that long. So at a certain point, they say, "You got to finish your beer." And that's when I kneel and chug.
This Whidbey Island ferry ride. I don't know the Whidbey Island one. I don't even know where it was going.
I mean, the Whidbey doesn't have a direct connection. Is up here.
It doesn't go directly to Seattle, does it? Yeah, Everett?
No.
Let's open up the old map here.
You can hop on the ferry near our house, our various houses. It takes a stop in Kingsley, I think, and then another, then continues on to Whidbey Island.
Kingston, right?
Kingston, yes.
Kingsley Shacklebolt.
Well, you look that up. Tommy Lee Jones goes up, he gets coffee, pours some booze in it.
Buckle Tio.
Ew. Well, that's gross. It's close to here. Ashley Judd sees her chance. Tommy Lee Jones strangely has left his keys in the ignition of the car. Seems like a real mistake. So she turns the car on and starts smashing the side of the car into a pipe on the ferry to try and bust the handle off that she's handcuffed to.
Also,
she pushes somebody's
Whidbey to Muckleteo. I'm looking at the map right now. Probably a 5 to 10 minute ferry.
Yeah.
It is not
far.
This is the best scene of the movie.
For sure, 100%.
It's fun. It actually kind of is fun. She's smashing these cars. She accidentally pushes one car off the front of the ferry, but no one notices.
No one notices.
Also, I want to just demystify the ferry experience. There are at least 4 people in orange vests in the car deck at all times. There would have been 2 people being like, "Stop that."
Yeah. Stop
the moment.
Don't
from the moment she turned
Geo Metro off.
From the moment she turned the car on, someone would have been on top of her.
Yeah.
Saying no thank you. But she's smashing the handle. Tommy Lee Jones sees her smashing cars and runs down hops into the car with her. And she still can't get the damn handle off. So she just drives the car that she's in with Tommy Lee Jones into the water.
Plan B. We'll see if the water takes the handcuff off. Yeah.
Yeah. They wrestle around. Tommy Lee Jones is like, "Okay, I guess I'll unlock your handcuffs so you don't drown."
He's a real Batman.
Yeah,
she sees the opportunity and steals his gun. Then they're wrestling in the water as people as crew members of the ferry are trying to throw like life preservers. And she clocks Tommy Lee Jones with his pistol and swims away. Very impressively tucking the pistol in her pants while swimming underwater. But she does it. It's on the camera. Not a special effect.
Hey,
she trained in jail.
Yeah, she trained to be an expert swimmer in jail.
I guess in the showers.
Yeah.
They have that indoor pool there.
Yeah.
We get a really strange scene of a little kid on the ferry watching her swim up to the beach and then run into the forest. And then we get a reaction shot of this random kid being like, "Huh?"
It's funny that the second car goes over and the entire ferry is like, "Holy fucking shit."
Yeah.
They notice this one.
Now we get.
Also, I just think that it's probably not feasible to do what she did.
No.
Just in terms of, you know, this is ocean water. This is the Puget Sound. It's probably very cold.
I'm curious what island she swims to. I assume it's one of the little islands in the San Juans, but and there's a lot of work she has to do.
Yeah, she's got to find a way off that island now. Yeah.
But don't worry about it. We cut to sometime later. There's a tomato farmer who's her mom who's like, oh, yeah, your dad's out drinking. Here's the giant stack of money we've buried just in case, I guess, you get framed for murder and have to go on the run.
I think it's supposed to be like your father's domestically violent. I keep this so I can escape someday. Anywho, you take it so you can go kill your husband who you already killed. Love you. See you at Christmas.
Break the cycle, baby.
Oh, she could have swam to Hat Island.
Ooh.
It's a little island right off the Mukilteo Whidbey ferry route.
Yeah.
So she probably had to steal some resident's like personal boat to get out of there, right?
Oh, I mean, definitely.
Hat Island is very small. Oh, there is roads on it though. Wow, look at this. We gotta go to Hat Island. It's got a golf club, people.
Yeah, I assume rich people live there and they all have their own boats to get to and from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they probably, you know, rich people on an island would be the ones most likely to leave their keys in the boat.
Yeah.
That part I'm like, fair okay, enough. Yeah, she can find her way.
Wait, it looks like there might be a ferry route.
Sorry, Jacob. No plot. We got to get to the bottom of Hat Island.
It looks like at least there's a dotted line on Google Maps from Hat Island up to North Everett. So there might be a ferry line there next to the naval station.
It goes between the Hat Island Marina and the Everett Yacht Club. This is a confirmed rich people like commune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep this in. Everyone needs to know the local color.
Yeah. Mute my stuff for this part. Just do the boat talk. Okay, here we go. Libby goes to a BMW dealership somewhere in the western half of the United States and says, here's my social security number. What's my address, please?
Yeah.
Do a credit check.
Run a credit check. I want to buy this Mercedes. My name is Angie. Hello. And also, the credit check does not come up deceased.
Oh,
No. It says, here's the address where you died, Angie. And she's like, great, see ya. So then she just is there near where that happens and looks up. Does she go to the... Oh, she's at the library again. Looks up the microfiche on Angie, which it's like she died in a mysterious gas explosion, survived by her boyfriend and son. No other details necessary. So then it's like, ah, damn, I guess we're out of luck. But wait, the newspaper article in the background has a picture. In the picture is the painting, the Kandinsky painting that we saw earlier in the movie. And she's like, ah, obviously, I'll just go ask all the art dealers for where to go get that painting.
Is that even really something that she would need to have seen in the background of a photo to know to investigate?
I guess
maybe
it's just
a good reminder.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's also kind of funny because it's like you've got Nick who is just wiling out, taking his son everywhere, and also I guess taking his paintings with him everywhere. Obviously they're very important to him. We get that established.
Yeah.
So she goes to an art store and is like, "I want to buy an art, please.
One art, please."
One art Kandinsky style, please. So then he goes on, well, we just got to go on the internet to artzone.net and type in Kandinsky painting, that one. And look for the owner who it's been sold by, I guess.
Yeah.
It got really confusing. Part of it being because I didn't remember what year it was. It said 1999, Jonathan Devereaux. So it looks like maybe he sold it and then rebought it.
But he sold it to, he was like, oh, you can't. She's like, I specifically want a 1911 Kandinsky painting. He's like, well, there's only one and it's been sold to a museum in Munich. Oh. And she's like, can you see who the seller was? Maybe they have another one they want to sell. And he's like, I don't see why not.
And that's when probably not a crime.
Yeah. And then Tommy Lee Jones shows up and we get the second best scene.
I just want to see a scene where Nick is like setting the stove to explode and then he's getting his son and his favorite paintings in his car and is like, see ya, honey, we'll be back in a few hours.
It's that scene from Three Ninjas where he leaves like a little cactus candle out.
Yeah.
That's Three Ninjas, right?
That sounds right.
Okay, yeah.
I only saw it as an 8-year-old. I don't remember. Tum Tum and Colt.
Yeah, and they had a Game Gear.
What was the third one? Randy?
I don't know, but they had a Magic Game Gear. That's all I care about.
Maybe that's a future episode. We're just cooking up right now. So then, as she's there at the art store, we've seen earlier, Tommy Lee Jones goes to the house where Angie's died and talks to the neighbor that Libby had talked to earlier and is like, do you remember the lady? Do you have any details? And he's like, I don't know, she's driving like a truck, I guess. So now Tommy Lee Jones is driving around looking for a truck. He sees one.
Finds it.
Ditching. Jackpot.
Bullseye. That is her truck. So then he goes into the art store and talks to the gallery owner. Well, Ashley Judd makes a printout of here is Jonathan Devereaux's name and location. She runs out of the back of the art gallery into her truck, but she's been parked in by Tommy Lee Jones. So now it's car smashing time.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
Yet again.
She smashes the ever living shit out of this town. The entire town.
Yeah, to be fair,
she flips one car.
To be fair, I don't know why Tommy Lee Jones thought that it would work based on his previous experience to block in like a 1960s Ford truck with like his 1995 like Geo.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Also, presumably a rental.
We got the insurance.
Yeah, that's right.
She smashes his car, she flips his car, she smashes some other cars, she smashes a payphone that a guy's talking on. She's just going nuts with this car, but safely smashes her way to freedom.
Is this at this level of escaped convict, is this like what a parole officer does? It's a little above his pay grade to be tracking down this lady who's smashing a bunch of shit.
I would feel like with the amount that she smashed, there would probably be local police also looking for this green truck at this point.
That's right. For single Jeopardy purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of crimes being committed. Don't worry about that. She's now in New Orleans.
Boom.
Yeah.
Days later, I guess. I forget how she finds out Jonathan Devereaux is throwing a big old party.
She goes to the hotel.
Yeah. And I think it says somehow she knows that he owns the hotel.
Yeah.
He owns the hotel?
Yeah,
he owns the hotel.
That's his business, his new business.
How did he buy it?
Maybe it was a rundown old raggedy place that he spruced up.
Angie's insurance money? I have no idea.
Yeah, okay, a lot of questions here, but okay, she's at the hotel, she sees a rich old dowager there, and so she identity thefts her to get a fancy dress on her dime. She says, oh yeah, I'm that rich lady, give me a dress and
I need an Armani.
I'm going to get made up.
She does a little miniature pretty woman with the hotel dress person. Is this a thing? A dress store in a hotel where you can charge it to the room?
I'm going to say
like you can do that in Vegas.
Yeah, I was like, in Vegas, but New Orleans?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some fucking fancy ass hotels in New Orleans that I wouldn't stay at.
Yeah.
That have shit like this in there.
Yeah, every Airbnb that I stayed at did not have any stores.
They did have locked closets, though, that I'm always like, what's in that locked closet?
Yeah, who's in there?
Here, we have our temporary guest.
Oh, hi, Dusty.
Hi, Dusty.
Hi, Dusty. What'd you get
to the movie,
Dusty?
Nothing, huh?
Was it your favorite movie, Dusty?
Double Meow Party.
Dusty prefers Josie and the Pussycats.
That's right.
I think we all do.
And, of course, cats and cat people and Lion King, let's say. So she's all dressed up. She goes to the party there. Jonathan Devereaux is hosting an art an auction. He's part of an auction. They're auctioning off dates.
It's bachelor night. It's like an auction off a date with the world's best bachelors. This is a thing that happens in all movies and television shows that I don't know if it happens in real life or not. I don't think it does.
What like filthy rich bachelors and bachelorettes are going to these things to score dates?
Like, I don't know. There's that Frasier episode where he and Niles get auctioned off. I feel like this happens in all of these shows.
Yeah, happened on Parks and Rec. I saw it.
That's right. Totally normal thing.
But Parks and Rec, they're probably paying like $50 for a date,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Here, it's up to $10,000 in 90s yeah. dollars.
Although she's not going to pay that. She doesn't have that money. That's
no.
Charge it to old What's-Her-Face's room. Fuck you.
although it's funny, she does all this scamming, but she still has a giant wad of cash. I guess she spent it on air travel to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, here's where my memory of the sequence of events gets a little funny, but she's there at the auction. There's a bidding war to go on a hot date with Jonathan Devereaux, who is also Nick. She gets in a bidding war with some random lady who has a couple scenes here for no reason. But she, Libby wins the auction. She shows up as this is her big, you know, revenge moment, which kind of peters out in a way I didn't expect because I kind of thought we were getting to the end of the movie.
It immediately peters out and then lasts for another 45 minutes.
This could have been the second to last scene of the movie.
Easily.
In The Fugitive, I think there is literally an auction scene and that's where the finale is. So I was like, oh yeah, okay, they're just ripping off another movie.
Yeah, she bids on her husband and has a big confrontation with him and introduces herself to like the other people that were bidding on him. It's like, I'm his wife and I just want to get my child and get out of here, and you know, belittles him, and it seems like it's going somewhere, and she's like, eh, Tommy Lee Jones is here, gotta go, bye.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah.
I especially like that Jonathan Devereaux is, it tells her like, oh, we should talk about this privately. And she's like, no, we're solving this now.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. We'll tell you, take care of this tomorrow. Gotta go.
We should say that I believe we skipped a scene where we meet the best character in the movie, which is a totally incomprehensible Louisiana cop named Jim Mango.
Mangrove.
Oh, it's Mangrove.
Yeah, it's Mangrove.
I thought it was Mango.
I'm both pretty good.
Jim Mango's pretty good.
Somebody's improv character wanders into the movie for 5 minutes.
He sounds like Louisiana Boomhauer from King of the Hill. You can't understand a word he says.
Well, it's also weird because Tommy Lee Jones just kind of exists in this kind of like, I can't quite pinpoint what part of the South you're from, but you definitely have a Southern accent. And so it's just the two of them being like, well, spit on a frog's back. I don't know about that. Yeah, I hear you. We got to get to that party, though, because your citizen's in danger. And it's just also, that back and forth.
He's like, hey, I'm a parole guy, and I need to inform the local cops. And like, cool, informed. And then the giant party where they know she is going to be happens. And just Tommy Lee Jones gets.
Also, though, yeah. Like there's the scene, and I don't know anything about policing, and you know, other than that they're bastards. They're
Is that
like
what
he's
the
like
B stands for.
That's what the B stands for. I think I thought it was all
that
cops
was
are bad.
whatever you want it to be.
He says this lady is a fugitive and she's in your town, and they're like, well, we're not going to do anything about it, so sorry. And then I just assume that as soon as you say there's a fugitive in your town, they just put that in some sort of machine that then tells everybody, here's the fugitive, right? Isn't that what an APB is?
They loop back like, around on this later because she goes to a bar after the party where the bartender is like, oh, yeah, you're wanted, but they didn't put a reward out, so I don't care. And she's like, oh, thanks. You're like the one nice person. And then the cops show up and she's like, gotta go.
Yeah, I just don't get like why putting an all points bulletin which is, I think, is what an APB stands for, is like a thing that Tommy Lee Jones has to like roll a diplomacy check on with this local police officer rather than just like fugitive. Great. We'll do the thing that we do five times a day.
Well, it was a particularly humid afternoon, you see.
We're all out of sweet tea, and it's really gummed up the works.
Yeah, the precinct as a whole is a case of the vapors.
Look, I don't blame Libby for not having a lot of expectations of support from the criminal justice system. But I do think at the point where she has face-to-face confronted her supposed-to-be dead husband, she could probably actually talk to Tommy Lee Jones and just point from her to the husband and Tommy Lee Jones and go like,
That's his,
change like, anything?
That's his whole hotel. He can't just leave it.
Yeah.
It'd be like destitute if he just disappears and runs away.
I would say arguably she owns half that hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, the last line of the movie is Jim Mango saying, well, since you are still married to him, I guess you inherit this hotel.
Also,
and she says, no, thanks.
I looked it up. It is not Mangrove or Mango. It's Mangold.
Mangold. I prefer
not
both Mango and Mangold.
Ours are better.
That's a third Xavier's solution right there. Okay, so it seems like the movie's going to end, but it doesn't. So now she's got to go meet Nick and her son at the best place for a, I don't know, trade? It's unclear exactly what the plan is, but they're going to go meet at the old cemetery.
Oh, Jacob, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you missed maybe the worst scene in the movie, the umbrella chase.
Oh, yeah.
There's a chase on a rainy day where everyone has umbrellas. There you go, that's it. They don't catch her.
He's outsmarted them.
You know that sequence in The Bourne Identity when Jason Bourne just uses the crowd to disappear from all the cops chasing him? Mm-hmm. It's that, but boring.
Yeah, like 4 minutes of umbrellas.
Yeah. It really feels like a sequence from Heavy Rain, the video game.
Where you don't press any of the QuickTime event buttons.
That's right. So there, she sees her son at in the cemetery, but she's like, hey, come say hi, Maddie. And he runs away from her.
Yeah, but he looks like a rude little puke.
Yeah.
He's drinking a Sprite.
Was it? I thought it was a beer. I thought like he had been given a beer.
All I know is that it was a green bottle, so I assume Sprite, because children can't have beer, even bad ones.
I assumed, as soon as I saw the bottle, I was like, oh, this is definitely not her son. It is some sort of rapscallion that Bruce Greenwood hired, and he hired him by giving him a beer.
Yep.
She tries to find Maddie, but is jumped by Nick, who bonks her on the head, knocking her unconscious. And then she wakes up buried alive in a coffin in the mausoleum, I think.
Yes. Which is, I think, the scariest part of the movie. Would be not great.
Kind of surprised Nick didn't just kill her, considering he's murdered people in the past.
Yeah, right.
Sure, this is a much more terrifying way to kill her, except she shoots the hinges off the locks on the coffin.
There's a freaking dead guy in there.
Gross.
There is a ghost in there.
Why? What was keeping the coffin shut?
Yeah, that's my thing. I don't understand coffins. Do they lock? Do they lock from the outside?
Presumably not. Unless you have like a zombie problem or something.
Yeah, maybe he locked it and we just never saw the evidence of it.
Yeah. Also, how could you tell where the hinges are from the inside?
Oh, she peels the fabric away. She actually looks at the hinges. She does a little investigation check.
Nice. Rolled a 16.
I mean, it was
good
smart.
Enough.
I don't know if I would have been that smart in that situation.
I think it's lucky for Nick that she didn't just shoot him, since she just had a gun with her and he didn't take it off of her.
I mean, this is the thing. This is the thing that's weird for me, is the movie's called Double Jeopardy, and they go out of their way to be like, you can just shoot him in the face in Times Square. Literal line, and just walk away. It's where Trump got it, I think. I can just shoot someone in Times Square, and they can't do anything.
He loves this movie.
He loves this movie. And yet, the last 45 minutes of the movie is her going out of her way to make sure she does not kill this guy. And I'm like,
yeah.
There would have been so much more interesting if you did some sort of elaborate mousetrap style way to get him like befuddled enough so you can just murder him. That would have been a fascinating movie. Or better than this.
Yeah.
You could do a revenge movie if your audience is willing to accept that it is legal to kill someone in this scenario.
Yeah,
This movie should have been called Can I Have My Son Back and not Double Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Comma, please.
Yes. Because at the end, she's like, can I have my son? He's like, no. She's like, okay, well, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
See ya. Eventually, we get to the point where she confronts Jonathan Devereaux / Nick / whatever his middle name was in his hotel, and Tommy Lee Jones is there.
Yeah,
Tommy Lee Jones now believes her. Tommy Lee Jones has talked to Bruce Greenwood as Jonathan Devereaux and goes on a whole rampage at Jim Mangrove's office being like, Washington State, send me a driver's license photo.
Yeah, exactly.
And now he believes her and like they're on the same page and it should be the end of the movie already. Just go arrest the man for murder. But instead they could,
but no.
So they confront them. Jacob, go.
They confront Jonathan Devereaux. Tommy Lee Jones has cracked the case wide open with the genius plan of like, I went online and looked for a picture of you, and it is of you. Look at this picture. I found a copy of your driver's license, and you're on it.
Gotcha. Yeah, but he's like, cut me in, give me $1 million, and I'll go away. And then, the husband spills the beans on absolutely everything.
Oh, that's right. They're trying to get him on recording. That's what it was.
Yeah,
I was just really confused.
Tommy Lee Jones has a yak back in his pocket. Got the whole thing on tape.
That's right. And they're like, now we got you. And Nick goes, aha, but did you think about this? By which I mean, he just pulls a gun and starts shooting. Libby, does she shoots him or disarms him or something?
She just shoots him. Like, she just shoots him. He's about to shoot her, but he's only shot Layman, Tommy Lee Jones, in the back. Tommy Lee Jones tackles him. They roll around on the floor for 2 seconds. Bruce Greenwood stands up to kill him, but by that point, Libby's gotten her gun and shoots him. And that's it. That's like the end of the movie.
I could kill you, but I would rather put you in jail.
But then is forced to kill him.
She has the combined defense of self-defense and double jeopardy to back her up in court. So that's a done deal. Right. He's walking out of there.
And the vote of confidence of her parole officer.
Yeah.
She's earned his respect.
But who is like a discredited parole officer who can't ever have his job back.
And then you might think this is the end of the movie, but we get one more scene where Tommy Lee Jones drives her to go see her son somewhere.
Yeah, it's a private school in Georgia. It's like the Future Senators of America Institute.
It's like West Point for babies.
Yeah, it's a bunch of kids playing soccer because in the 90s, everyone loved soccer because America won the World Cup. Oh God! I had to play so much soccer. I fucking hate soccer. Why did
I
have
to play soccer
it?
Too?
Oh God! Why was that the thing? What a terrible sport.
Were you on a soccer team, Jacob, as a child?
No. I was on a baseball team for a few years, and then I was like, "No, Mom, Dad, no. I'm a noodly boy who will become a lawyer. I don't want any physical activities."
I was on a soccer team. Well. I was on a soccer team for 2 years, and then I discovered Super Mario RPG, and I never looked back.
Hell yeah. A 6-hour-long game took over your life. Yeah.
Yeah, now it's just jumping from one 80-hour game to the next until I die.
That's right. The end. That's the end of this movie.
He recognizes her voice.
He's a beautiful voice.
He's a beautiful sack of potatoes. They're reunited.
He says, "They told me you were dead."
Which, how
I'm
the
not,
fuck?
Baby.
They're like, "Your mom's dead, but also your dad has a new name."
Yeah.
Your mom's dead and in jail, and also your other mom died.
Yeah.
And,
so your mom,
you know, it's all good.
Tried to kill me, and that's why I had to change my name, I guess. And also she died, but I'm keeping the name because I like it. I love being a southern gentleman.
I have a fun accent. We're going to go hog wild on that gumbo.
Frankly,
try the egg St. Jacques.
I just like speaking this away.
Oh, mercy me.
Give me that sack of potatoes.
There you go. Double Jeopardy.
Double Jeopardy.
Right.
Woo!
Double Jeopardy, 1999. I think there is at least two other movies called Double Jeopardy out there. This is the Ashley Judd one.
Yeah, hopefully we watched the right one. Hopefully Maria is horribly disappointed.
I mean, based on the description of beige boat rich people.
That's right.
I hope this is the only one that fits that description.
I was having that concern at the beginning of the movie, and then I saw all the beige white people at a party, and I was like, okay, good. Right movie.
I turned it on last night, and I was like, Double Jeopardy, right? Double Jeopardy? And I had to look at our Discord chat. Good story.
Now, I did write down earlier in the movie in my notes when I thought this was going to be more of a revenge movie, Judd Dredd.
That's good.
But that pun's not as good because she doesn't kill a bunch of people.
Judge Judy and Executioner. I'm rolling with it, people.
What's the Jennifer Lopez movie where she gets jacked to kill her abusive boyfriend? Because that's all I could think of.
Is that Out of Sight? No, that's where she's a cop hunting George Clooney, I think.
All right, let's look it up.
Is it Parker?
Here's our lookup break.
No. Enough.
I don't know if this movie's better or worse than Enough, but it definitely, there was a moment where I was like, is this going to be another Enough? Is she going to just beat the crap out of this guy? No. Disappointing.
You should have just shot him at the head at the auction. How awesome would that have been?
Yeah. Can't touch me.
Double Jeopardy.
Double Jeopardy.
My friend in jail told me this is not a crime.
You know, my drug dealer told me that I could do this.
They really do set the stakes, though, and then refuse to, like, play by the rules that they set. They set the rule.
Why was she doing all these crunches?
Yeah. You can kill this guy.
She outran the Jeep.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's true. But she didn't outrun the Jeep.
Oh, she almost outran the Jeep.
She only outran him for temporarily.
As she caused damage to a police vehicle. There you go. That was the benefit of all that running.
I feel like what ended up happening is someone said, you can't make Ashley Judd unlikable. So everything she does has to be for the benefit of her child and in self-defense, even though the plot, like the movie, I mean, even the trailer of the movie is, you can kill this guy and they can't touch you because you've already done the time. You've already been through the system.
I'm sorry to say this, but this would have been a better movie if it was sleazier. Like if,
For sure.
If Bruce Greenwood was like a abusive, crazy person, then not only would that explain all the like terrible stuff he does, but it would be like, she should go save her son with violence. If this was sleazy, I'd be like, but because it's like, tries to be classy, it doesn't really work at all.
Yeah,
there are much better 90s thrillers. Just watch anything with Michael Douglas in it from this era or The Fugitive.
Just watch 88 Minutes. Not better, but I have more fun.
It was more fun.
It also takes place in Seattle.
That's right.
Good place for thrillers.
Seattle movies.
Jet City Improv right there.
Yep, Jet City Improv poster right in it. With them dressed up like Boy Scouts.
That's right.
All right.
Okay.
We did
all right, who's fixing this bad boy?
Wait.
Oh,
we
the
got
tests.
One more thing we got to do, which is going to be
uh-oh.
This is the perfect perfect movie for this. The perfect time period for the tests. Does this movie pass the Bechdel test? Are there two named female characters?
Yes,
there are. Do two of them ever talk to each other? Yeah, a couple times. Mm-hmm. Do they ever talk to each other about anything other than Nick or Maddie?
Is Double Jeopardy? Double Jeopardy is not a man.
I kind of think the context of that,
but the context is,
I don't think it passes.
Specifically about, they must talk about something other than Nick and Maddie,
right? I don't think they do. Because Ashley Judd doesn't have an inner life. Her only character feature is wanting to get her son back. And all of her conversations circle that, or trying to figure out where her husband is. Or that she didn't kill him, or that she wants to kill him.
What if she had given her son to... What if she had given her son to anyone but Angie?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Oh, yeah, continue with the test.
I mean, there's a lot that doesn't make sense. It's definitely not clear enough a win to be a win. You know what I mean? No. Like,
she would have to have something else to talk about.
I mean, I would have to really dig deep and to see if maybe she and Angie talk about boats at the beginning.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe. She talks to a dress retailer about buying a dress for the purposes of killing her husband or whatever, but
yeah, and the dress retailer
doesn't come
up
in the conversation,
and the dress retailer doesn't have a name. So.
There's it.
Oh, you're right. Never mind.
Oh yeah, she works as a hairstylist in the prison salon, and they talk about hair.
Yeah, but that lady also doesn't have a name.
It is not. Yeah.
No, I don't think it passes that test. The racial Bechdel test, or maybe the DuVernay test, about having two people of color named people of color characters who talk to each other, I don't think it even passes on that.
I think there's one person of color with a name,
or two prison friends.
It's the prison. It's her prison friends who talk to her about.
Yeah, is Margaret a person of color though? I don't think she is.
Honestly, I don't know. And also, they just there are no important characters. There's nobody who's not straight. It's not going to pass the GLAAD test either.
For sure. No.
It's not going to pass any test.
Is that the rare triple fail?
I was thinking about
most of them
how,
are triple fails.
Yeah, they are. There's like a horseshoe for bad movies where if a movie is a bad, like, B movie, it's either going to pass all three tests with flying colors, or it's going to pass none of the tests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be either Triple X or it's going to be.
Oh, God. Triple X was so good.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a bad movie.
Man, we should go back sometime and just look at the list of movies we watched and just from memory rank them in terms of bad to good.
The ranking episode.
Yeah. Anyway, who's going to fix
this? The test.
Who's going to fix this bad boy?
Yeah. I don't remember who fixed the last one. I think I fixed one of them.
I fixed the last one. Okay.
I have nothing for this.
I have nothing for this.
Okay.
You can do whatever you want. There's so much.
That's what makes it harder, though. Having some constraints makes it easier.
Yeah.
You could have more plot twists. You could have less plot twists.
I'm going more, baby.
Baby.
When's the third act?
I actually have a plug this time, so let's not forget to do that.
Okay. When is the third act?
Ooh.
I almost feel like the third act is arriving in New Orleans. That's what I'd say too. We have Nick Jonathan Devereaux, and he's in New Orleans. And Ashley Judd is on the plane to New Orleans, I think, is the beginning of the third act. I think you can keep the hotel, ditch the hotel, whatever you want to do.
Okay, got it. We're in
New
Orleans.
I think part of the reason that this last chunk of the movie feels so weird is because you feel like the confrontation's coming and this is going to be the end, and then it just keeps going. So it's like a third act that's got maybe like another half of an act stuck just onto the end there.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And then she has to take the Eagles all the way back to the Shire.
they scour the Shire, etc.
Maddie becomes the King of Gondor. They kick Sharky out of the Shire.
You kneel to no one.
Tommy Lee Jones sails on the ship to the west.
Turns out Sharky was that lawyer after all.
Barbie Long.
Yeah.
He should have been at the end. I missed that guy.
Yeah.
Something should have happened with that character.
Daniel, we're giving you hints that you just
I think
don't
we
deserve.
Just I think we might have just fixed it.
Yeah.
Now I want to do one second. Everyone give me 1 minute to stare into space.
All right, we are back. Daniel, you got an ending for us. Something
All right.
that yes. rustles my jimmies?
Hopefully, we'll find out. All right, so...
Check jimmies pre and post.
Yes, take a jimmy measurement.
Wait, let me grab my composition notebook so I make sure that...
Well, it's a jimmy seismograph.
All right, Ashley Judd flies to New Orleans. She goes to the bachelor party where she's auctioning... where John Devereaux is being auctioned off, and she does the same thing. She bids really high, and she bids so high that she wins in part, and she gets to go up on stage, and she goes, "Aren't you going to give me a kiss?" Just like in the movie, and when he leans in to do it, she blows his head off with a gun. Hell yeah.
Finally.
Hell yeah. And she steals her. She steals his wallet while she's at it. She runs out of there while everyone's freaking out, makes a successful escape, and steals a car. Oh, she steals his car keys. She beeps his car because beeping cars yep. were a thing in the 90s. And she gets in it. She drives to the address that's listed on the driver's license, and she gets in his house. She's going to reclaim Maddie, and she's like, "Maddie, Maddie!" And a teen boy runs downstairs. He's like, "Who the fuck are you?" and she's like, "You don't recognize me?" And he's like, "No, I don't recognize you." And that's when she starts looking around the house and starts seeing, looking closer at the pictures. And then she takes out her own wallet where she's kept a vengeance picture of her husband. And she realizes, after all, this ain't her husband. We get a flashback.
What?
We get a series of flashbacks of her escaping prison and then just basically finding the first name and address suggested to her and going to that. And just going from random address to random address until she kills some random dude. And then we get another flashback. The way that the husband died is revealed. Why, he was slicing up more apples for the cheese plate and cut himself and stumbled around and then fell off the boat. Oh, what a dumb dumb.
As she expected.
And then we get a black screen that says the federal prison system wrongfully convicts, I don't know, 100,000 people every year. The prison system increases recidivism and houses people in inhumane conditions that contribute to more crime happening. The end.
Slavery didn't wow. end. It there just became prisons. Very good. I love it.
Great
Thank
ending.
You. Thank you.
Best
she was
ending.
Driven insane by prison.
That's
by
fantastic.
That makes sense.
There you go.
Yeah.
It feels like almost like that John Cusack movie, Identity.
I haven't seen that.
I'm sorry.
Is it good?
Oh my gosh.
No, you're
Is it good.
Should we watch Identity?
I love
yeah,
Identity.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, let's watch Identity as our next one, because if okay. Daniel's never seen it, let's avoid spoiling it for Daniel.
Is that the one where they curve bullets?
No, you
this
didn't
is,
want to.
This is a okay. horror movie where like mm-hmm. 9 to 12 people kind of all break down at the same hotel. They're all oh. famous character actors. And they all start getting like murdered by a serial killer.
One,
I think
by
I know
one.
The twist to this.
Who recently escaped?
But they're all the same.
The twist
dude.
Might be in the title.
a non-singular identity.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. We fixed it. What
we
a better ending!
Perfect. Very good.
A plus. Hey, if you are a listener and want us to watch a movie, clearly we are open to that. So
especially if it's currently on Netflix or
oh,
any
yeah.
major streaming service.
I'm just yeah. going to say Maria knocked it out of the freaking park. Great movie.
Yep.
Fun to riff on. And most importantly, on Netflix, but none of us had to buy it.
Yeah, it was very easy to find. I didn't have to search at all. Very good.
Yeah, I guess if anyone wants to watch this movie, I don't see why you would. It's on Netflix. Go nuts.
There you go.
I mean, if it's like you're sick and it's like a Wednesday morning and you're just going to kind of nap the whole time, perfect movie.
Yeah.
Turn don't tell screen. Anyone. My wife watched this with me for the most part. She was out and about kind of while it was on. She liked it. She liked this movie, so, you know.
I didn't hate this movie. We
what was her favorite
much...
part? I want to know one. I want to know just a little detail.
Oh, I have to go interview her, but presumably the umbrella scene. What fun umbrella? Have you ever thought about not being able to find someone with lots of umbrellas?
I mean, I will say I like Ashley Judd and I like Tommy Lee Jones, but
yeah, the cast is great. It just was such a boring movie. They just decided to make it as bland as possible.
Yeah, I love Bobby Long too. Okay, you want to do a plug? I have one plug.
Wait, Jacob, before you do that, I was supposed to remind you, you had a Pacific Northwest story.
Oh, yeah!
That we're supposed to wait for the end of the podcast.
I have to share this because it's completely unrelated. So, we're all stuck inside, quarantine, pandemic.
Yeah.
Karen has been rewatching Twin Peaks, and I've kind of been jumping in and out.
Fantastic.
A show that we both love.
Great show.
On one of these days, I was like, I don't really want to watch Twin Peaks, but I was hanging out. But for whatever reason, I was like, but I do want to look on YouTube Twin Peaksy stuff. And for whatever reason, one of the recommended videos is this guy who runs a travel blog who loves Twin Peaks, visiting all the sites from Twin Peaks, including the new season.
Is it my old roommate, Kevin?
I don't think so, because one of the conceits is how creeped out and scared he is by all of the locations. So he's like in Snoqualmie at a, you know, gas station being like, this is the place where that lady got murdered and it really so scary here.
Here comes Bob.
Here's the intersection where that car ran that guy over. And I thought that was really funny as someone who those places are all over the place.
It just lives here. Yeah.
Holy freaking shit. I'm in the spot where he threw the rocks at the bottles.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty fun. As a local, it's very fun to see that because like, that's just a small town. It's fair. I love Twin Peaks and I love going to those places, but they're not very scary in real life.
You should send me a link to that so I can put it in the episode description.
Okay.
Yeah, please do. I want to watch it. yeah, that's just the place where if you want to go paintballing, that's where you get your Airbnb.
Oh yeah, that diner is fun. I like. Yeah. Karen and I have gone to the diner a bunch of times. It's cool.
Did you sit in the booth?
Yeah.
We
ordered cherry pie and coffee. It's a little overpriced, but it is actually really delicious.
I mean, if you're going to be that diner, why not overprice the cherry pie and coffee?
They have Twin Peaks memorabilia everywhere, and there you are.
Yep. You know, I've never had a slice of cherry pie my entire life.
What? That's bonkers.
sounds gross.
Watched Twin Peaks, Daniel?
No, apple pie for life. I've watched some of Twin Peaks, and it's on my bucket list to watch the rest.
I have watched the Twin Peaks up until the point where they reveal the murderer. And then I have not watched the season after that. Basically every time I've watched Twin Peaks.
That's fine, but you should totally watch The Return because it is wild.
Yeah, and I've seen Fire Walk With Me once. Anyway.
Yeah. If you like David Lynch stuff, which I do, Return is awesome.
Plugs.
I don't know why I said that. Okay, so here's my thought. I'm going to bring this serious for like 5 minutes for a better change of pace, which is that the world outside sucks.
Very much so.
The world in general sucks. And we have at least some listeners. So I think because we are not, let's say, recording a lot of other podcasts or having improv shows or whatever as often. I know Mike has a show. Mike, you should plug that show before I say the thing I'm going to say.
Okay, I have a show, Sunday nights, twitch.tv/packtheater. It's an Animal Crossing improv show. Check it out. It's fun. Anyway, go ahead, Jacob.
It is cool. So in lieu of what would normally be plugs, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to plug a place you can donate money for a good cause, particularly ones that are local to us. Sorry, other people who live elsewhere. So go to donorbox.org/NCBF. That is the Northwest Community Bail Fund. That is where you can donate money to be spent to get people out on bail in this area. For a while, this was focused on the ongoing protests. It's still doing that, but it's also getting people out on bail, which is super important when there is a horrible pandemic that is infecting, especially folks in the jail system. So if you like this episode, donate $5 when you hear it. That would be great. That would be better than donating to a Patreon for our tiny listenership.
Agreed.
There you go. That's my plug. Next time I'll promote something else.
Awesome. Good plug. I'll put a link to that in the episode description.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, now we can be silly again. That's all I got.
Okay, thank God. Oh, boy. All right, we got anything else?
We'll be back in 2 weeks with another movie. Which we will decide. I don't know if I want to do Identity now that Daniel knows the twist.
Spoiler alert.
That's a good twist, though. What a good twist.
It is a good twist.
A long time ago, we mentioned watching some Star Warses. You know, we should think about it.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about Star Warses? Like,
yeah.
Are we going to watch... Okay, we can take this offline. I'm in for a Star Wars.
We should just start with episode one. Every other episode is a Star Wars movie.
I will say, some of this will be... Leave this part in, which is I'll say, the original idea for this podcast was because of the prequels. And then after this podcast, I will explain to you maybe what we should do about that.
Okay. Hey, okay. Can I tell you guys something fucked up? The current state of Star Wars has got me nostalgic for the prequels. We were at the height of Star Wars when that was going on.
I'm gonna be honest with you, last Star Wars I saw was that Rian Johnson one I liked and everyone else hated.
I love that one.
I like that one.
I did not see Han Solo. I did not see Revenge of the Sith or whatever.
Oh, Rise of the Skywalker.
That's it. That's the one.
Watch Solo. Don't watch Rise of Skywalker.
Okay. Well, Daniel, you'll be proud of me. That is the only one I haven't watched. I could watch it at any time on Disney Plus, and I'm just like,
yeah, I have Disney Plus. I have Disney Plus. Could also watch it any time, but I'd rather watch Ant-Man and the Wasp over and over and over again.
Oh,
yeah.
Though,
also don't watch that. It's mediocre.
Actually, episode 9 has one thing which is worthwhile. It also almost makes the whole movie worth watching. It's my man, Babu Frick. He's awesome. He's the Star Wars character I never knew I needed, but he's finally in the worst Star Wars movie.
Okay. I would like to see Lando just to see him.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
There is a 5-minute stretch of Solo that is very bad. Other than that, that movie kicks ass. I liked it all.
All right, I'll watch Solo. I love Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian.
Then you're going to like Solo. Yeah. You're going to have a great time.
Okay, I'll watch Solo.
Yeah.
Make Baby Lando the Solo film.
Oh, Baby Lando?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just give Donald Glover 2 hours to do a thing.
Yeah, Bosk the Bounty Hunter has to shepherd Baby Lando around.
Well, let me ask. Well, first I have to ask you, Daniel, how you feel about The Mandalorian coming back soon?
Great.
I also haven't watched any of that.
You should watch that. That's
it's
good
highly
stuff.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. It is what I want for my Star Wars.
I'll also tell you, Daniel, I've been playing the Jedi Fallen Order on the Xbox. It's a little janky.
I played a lot of that before getting sucked into Valorant. And feel similarly, but I ultimately really like that game.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good stuff about it, other than that it is a little janky.
Jedi Tomb Raider.
Yeah, it is very janky. There's some bad decisions, but in terms of it is watch or playing it, is maybe go like, oh yeah, I actually kind of like Star Wars.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Isn't that weird? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, Star Wars is good.
The weirdest
it's a good time.
The weirdest part of that game is that the first level is in like a scrapyard, and they're like scrapping a bunch of like Clone Wars ships, and I was like, oh, the Clone Wars ships.
Yeah,
nostalgia. But I'm like, ew, I didn't like those movies. What the fuck is happening to me?
Look, we all deal with trauma in different ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you're just retreating to the cocoon of being 9 years old again.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, being 17 and disappointed years old.
Oh, I was thinking Phantom Menace style, but I guess that's still pre-Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Me and Daniel seeing that movie together opening day in the theaters.
Hell yeah.
I was dressed like a Sith. I had my lightsaber. It was confiscated by an usher. I went with the drama department of my high school. One of my friends got a job popping popcorn that very day.
Wow.
In line, dressed as a Jedi. Oh, can I get a
Is that the theater you eventually worked at?
I never worked at that specific theater. I worked at the art theater downtown.
Ooh, that's better.
It was basically just the same, but it had March of the Penguins on pretty much 24/7 for the old people who lived in the neighborhood.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was good.
All right. I think we should call it. We did.
That's a podcast. Yeah, that's a podcast.
That there's a podcast. I'm leaving in all of the Star Wars talk.
Oh, yes, please do. Please do. Perfect. Love it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another movie. It might be a Star Wars. It might be an Identity. We will talk about that offline. Thank you so much for listening.
Probably not a Harry Potter. Sorry.
Not a Harry Potter. Yeah. That's not going to happen.
Keep it real.
Yummies.
Later.
Bye.
All right, bye.